Hey guys, this is Anthony from Boundless. We just launched a survey for The Boundless Show. We want to hear your thoughts on how we can make The Boundless Show better. Go to boundless.org/survey to share your thoughts. We really appreciate it. Boundless Show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I am Lisa Anderson, excited to be with you here in June. Just FYI, I was telling the team, the release date of the show is 2 days before my birthday, so if you haven't said happy birthday to me yet, please do so. Just give me a call here at Focus, or shoot me an email, or say what up on the Boundless site. That is my self-promotion for the day. I'm ready to celebrate with all y'all. Also ready to celebrate with the show later on. Dr. Greg Smalley, who happens to be my boss, answers a question from one of y'all who is in love with someone, but you are living in a different country than that person. Does that matter? How are you going to negotiate this? What does that look like? Then our own Jim Daly. Oh my goodness, it's like bosses at Focus Week. Jim Daly, president and CEO of Focus on the Family, has a book, Marriage Done Right, kind of giving a large, what would you say, bird's eye view of really marriage culturally. What does it look like, the philosophy of marriage in that? So we're going to talk about some big, large, broad brush thoughts about marriage with our own Jim Daly. Speaking of marriage, spanning the decades, I've got Ken, Yvette, and Ashley here. Hey, y'all.
Hey.
Great to have you. There was an article recently in the Washington Post, and it was around what men and women wanted in a spouse in 1939 and then comparing it to today. Not surprisingly, a few things have shifted in priority. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about what people wanted in 1939 and then shame y'all because you all want things that are much more shallow. So we're going to call you each to the carpet individually with your own preferences. No, we'll actually see, because you're all Jesus followers. We'll see if any of that has been affected. But probably not surprisingly, because, you know, I talk about, like, you know, the greatest generation a lot and stuff here. These are those peeps. And back in the day, they were looking for dependable character first, so someone with emotional stability and maturity, actually both men and women, that was the top of their list, followed by a pleasing disposition, which don't we all just assume we have pleasing dispositions, but apparently not. Nowadays, there are people that have pleasing dispositions, and then there are catty and crazy people. And so you tend to fall on the spectrum in one of those categories. But pleasing disposition was important. And then other things like good health, and then a desire for home and children and commitment to faith and maybe similar values and stuff were big things. Top of the list for both sexes today is mutual attraction. What does that mean? That sounds kind of vague to me. And then it's like slash love. Like, those are the same things. okay, maybe we need a little bit of a vocab lesson, y'all. But anyway, that's the top of the list. Fortunately for us, things like desire for home, children, and character character's not even on this list. Okay, character didn't make it. Desire for home and children did. But so did good looks, sociability, education, stuff like that. So, seems like, you know, some of the values, or at least the stated values, have changed a little bit. And I know all y'all probably reviewed the article yourself. Any surprises for you guys? Even in thinking of, I mean, even if you compare your generation to, say, your grandparents, any surprises in that?
I think, sadly, not too many surprises. Mm-hmm. I think there's an understanding that there is there's been a big shift in what we're looking for, or what is even emphasized in what we watch in media, what we even counsel our friends through. I think it's kind of something that's been, like, I was not shocked to see that chastity fell to the bottom of the list for, you know, both genders. So I think it's kind of sadly something that we're seeing.
Yeah.
I agree, because I think, especially that the mutual attraction thing, I think that makes sense, because our generation is so visual. We've grown up with TV, and we have social media, and Instagram, everybody loves pictures, and back in the 1930s and 40s, they didn't have that. Mm-hmm. So it was just they had different values, different things that they appreciated, like, so that, I don't know, that just makes sense to me.
Yeah, interesting.
Plus, back then, too, I think they also were more concerned about finding someone that to survive with.
Like, right.
Roles
right.
were more defined, so the wife needed a husband to bring home
right.
money to pay for food and all of that. And
right.
the wife,
much more distinct gender
right,
roles.
Right, exactly. So you,
culture.
Like, needed each other, really, to survive, whereas now it's mm-hmm. not really like that.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think that the, Yvette, you brought up the whole chastity thing. Do you think it's at the bottom of the list because people don't care or just they think it's so unattainable that, like, why would you even put it at the top of your list? Because the chances of you're getting it.
I think it's probably both.
Okay.
You know, like, I think for Christian singles, I've seen that drop in priority mm-hmm. based on the attainability. Like, mm-hmm. based on, you know, that people make mistakes and I'm not going to have this, you know, crazy expectation. And then I think for, you know, the secular world who does not have those same convictions, mm-hmm. I think it's such an outlandish notion to wait. And it's been sold to them as something that you should know your sexual compatibility beforehand. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not valued the way that it should be. Even if I just see it deteriorating more and more. I think even from when, you know, I was in college, I felt like there was still this somewhat of a value in purity and not having a lot of partners, whereas I see that reversing now, where that's just
yeah
not even something to be
yeah
proud of.
Ken, would you say from a guy's point of view, like looking back decades ago, like say to your grandparents and other old folks you have in your sphere, do you look at that kind of wistfully, like it's a simpler time? Like, why, you know, why can't we just do this? I mean, I know even in talking to my, you know, parents and grandparents, it was so... everything just seemed so easy. It was like everyone kind of was on the same page with their background, with their values and stuff. And it's just kind of like finding someone that you get along with. And now that seems to be like algorithms to like find people who are compatible to you. I mean, I know you're a process kind of guy. You know, you kind of like to have your ducks in a row. You're not into all this mystical business. So what do you wish you lived in 1939? Or how do you feel when you see those stats?
Not necessarily wish I lived in 1939. I like the things that 2016 affords me that they didn't have then.
Well,
but
that's true.
Jokes aside, it was a lot simpler. I sometimes feel, at least just through observation, overwhelmed with the sheer amount of complexity and tactics and rhythms and motions just to accomplish something that back then was very simple. You know, I would hear stories from those individuals like, well, I was at the ice cream shop and Deborah looked super cute. We went on a date and we got married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's like, oh, you know, now it's, you know, 2016, I was at a coffee shop and he glanced at me and then I glanced at her and then was that an attractive glance? Did he want to talk to me? Is he going to, I mean, like, it's mm-hmm. it's infinitely more complicated even on the initiation point. And that, like, overwhelms me because I'm a very simple approach person. I'm like, if I want to talk to you, I'll go talk to you. I don't have that doesn't phase me to go up and initiate a conversation. If they don't want to talk to me, fine, I'll move on. And that's almost the attitude almost all of those people had. I mean, like, that's almost how all their stories ever started mm-hmm. with me. I saw this person, I went and talked to him, happily ever after, you know, quote unquote, the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I would love for the simplicity of being, that comes across as more genuine to me than the spectacle of constantly micromanaging every thought and process and situation you come across. I would love for that to be in
yeah.
present day.
Okay, so taking like faith and scripture and everything out of the picture, do you think that just generally those days are gone for us? I mean, do you think that that's just nostalgia, that era is gone, never to return again? Because again, I mean, and we're going to talk about this in a second here, even in the church, we're seeing a lot of these attitudes creeping in and stuff. But overall, do you think that we just as a culture have to like let that go and say that was our parents' generation? I mean, because that it's like so sad, you know, to see again the simple values. It seems like the values of 1939, what was most important, almost anyone could have those. You could be a solid citizen. You could be, even if you weren't a believer, you could be a kind person. You could be, but now if everything's just based on attraction, that is like, you know, you don't know what you're getting into, it seems. I don't know,
because I think that there are still certain things that are just true mm-hmm. and that family and healthy relationships, like those are things, still things that are wellsprings of like wholeness and happiness. Mm-hmm. And so while I think that we may be looking for things differently, at the end of the day, what brings true joy, even for those who don't put their faith in Christ, is going to be things like community and meaningful work and family and legacy. So I think our priorities are definitely out of whack, and I don't know that those days are over, but I think that even with the bad priorities, people are still looking for ultimately those wholesome good things that mm-hmm. that a sustainable family has. And if you're going to have a more sustainable family with someone who has a pleasing disposition and for someone who has a good character, and I think that's still what people want, even if that's not what they know, even though if they don't know that's what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about how this translates to Boundless, to the church, to Christians, because I hear Christian young adults complaining all the time about, like, these guys, all they care about is, you know, what girls are attractive. And, you know, guys just say, she just cares how much money I make, and all she cares about is my job. That's the number one question she asks. So do you think it's, I mean, are you know, because I again will argue that attraction is important, but do you think that we have placed too much emphasis on them? And what does that look like as far as us reconciling, you know, a scriptural basis for marriage and family with preferences, which are also important? How do we, I mean, I think a lot of times as Christians, we're just trying to explain stuff away, you know, and say, okay, well, you know, whatever. But how has that played out in your own? Have you been frustrated with people that you think are more shallow than they should be given your faith, given their faith?
I've been there before. Mm-hmm. I have a great group of friends that are all single, but sometimes, especially the guys, tend to go towards girls that they just randomly met, like at Walmart or the supermarket. And just because they're really pretty, they ask them on dates. And mm-hmm. they don't ask the girls that are right there at church that have the depth and the character out on dates. And I think it's a lot of times because that's harder. That's scarier. Mm-hmm. And even for girls, it is scarier to, like, go on a date with someone at church that's in your friend group because there's more risk. Mm-hmm. And it's easier just to say, well, that guy's cute, so I'm just going to go with him because, and yeah, it might seem shallow, but there's no fear there because mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. So I think that one of the biggest lies that Satan has told us is that we can escape from risk and escape from trusting God, having to trust God, by just pursuing the shallow things. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah.
I'd agree with pretty much what a lot she said. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time of an individual, these are their acquaintance that I knew enough to know a little bit what's going on in their personal life, or even a personal friend, they would be around individuals like that in their church, and they would have great affection for a male or a female, and then they'd be like, oh no, but we're just friends, and then go date a guy for 6 months, marry him, and then I'll go see on Facebook, I married my best friend. I'm like, no, you didn't. You just married a guy that you just met like 6 months ago, and then you. It's not necessarily friend zoning, but it's like there. It is a. I mean, it. There's less risk involved with going with a stranger. Yes, there you can potentially, if things don't work out, hurt, you know, a relationship you have with a person. But if you're both believers and you both understand, you know what, we're just not. We don't want to, or we don't feel like, or we want to pursue other things, you know, mutually break it off. You can actually have very amicable breakups. It don't have mm-hmm. to be, it doesn't have to be bad. Any person that I have ever broken up with has been amicable, and I could call them right now and shoot the breeze with them. Yeah. I've always been very sure, in spite of does it hurt? Yeah, you know, I don't like relationships having any taint or tarnish in them, you know, not that that forever tarnishes it, you know, but it's, you know, if you're very deliberate in the sense of, I actually do care about this person, you know, whether they end up becoming just a friend or whether they become a husband or wife, you know, there is no risk involved because you love that person. Because while love might appear like a risk, it's the only one that ultimately can heal any taint or tarnish after a relationship may or may not have ended. Mm-hmm. When you're just shallow about it, it's like, well, let's just burn that bridge and then move on. Well, now you have a burned bridge mm-hmm. and that could never potentially be reconstructed. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is a very sad thing because there's plenty of those out there.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I don't know, I don't think I can think of a single person that I know in my church or elsewhere over 65 who has ever talked about these groups of friends that they grew up with, like the opposite sex. You know, I think that's something that's very unique to the latter generations of these friend groups and stuff. I mean, it was pretty much, you got to know a girl, you were getting to know her for the purpose of like figuring out if you're going to date and get married. It wasn't just like, let's go hang out with these girls at church and then go randomly off somewhere to the corner store and ask someone else out. You know, it's so I think that's kind of where we've cluttered it up a little bit too. It seems a little crazy making because then no one knows where they stand. You're just kind of like, well, what do they think about me? What does that look like? So yeah, I could see, I could see where that could be frustrating. Okay, what would y'all say then if we rewrote this list of priorities for Christians? I mean, I think we would all agree that like a solid and growing faith should be at the top of the list. I mean, there are some big, big rock things, but how do you go about finding those things in a person? How do you prioritize them, then find them in a person without just straight up looking like some kind of investigative journalist, like in relationships with people? I mean, how have you guys tried to apply that even in your own lives?
Well, a big thing for me, if I'm interested in someone, is praying that God would give me eyes to see the person how he sees them, and not just through my own lens of like emotion or infatuation or whatever. And God does. He shows me things that I maybe didn't notice before, or that like both good and bad. And it's, I think a lot of it is observing them in different situations. Like, how do they treat their family? What are they like when they don't have anything to gain from being kind to someone? Or are they teachable? Or how do they respond when somebody corrects them? Or, you know, those kind of things that you can't really get unless you just are there watching the situation. So I think it's just like, yeah, asking God to give you eyes and then really looking.
It's good.
I think I've tried to be just missional in my relationships in general, and knowing that when you are heading in a certain direction and surrounding yourself with a certain caliber of people, you know, like there's that kind of quality attracts quality, and people who are serious about their faith and how it impacts their day in, day out. And I do think that, as far as priorities, I do think that character and people who are legacy oriented, and I think that comes up in community, you know, best of all when you're getting to see people, whether it's in church or a friend group or family, friends, neighborhoods. I mean, in career wise, when you're at different kind of community groups that are doing things that are meaningful, that to me tends to be a good filter for kind of bringing out the people who are solid.
Yeah, that's good.
Whenever I approach a situation, the main thing for me is I don't like putting up like facades, and I don't mean that every person does this intentionally, but when you do approach relationships or situation, there is the desire, I want this person to like me. That's a admirable thing. I like people to like me. I'm not a fan of having enemies or people being like, oh, it's that Ken guy. Let's, you know, walk down the other side of the hallway of the, you know, the building. But it's, I think if I always try to approach it in a manner of taking the pressure off the person to perform for me. That's not the reason why I'm getting to know them. I have zero desire to change that person, number one, because I can't. I can't even change myself without the Holy Spirit, much less reach into the heart of another person and change them in my own strength. And so I think if, and at least me personally, if I started out without the pressure of, hey, you don't need to perform for me, be yourself, so that that way you'll just perform being yourself, and then there's not this whole, maybe I should have been more honest here, or I should have done this, or I wonder what they do in that situation. It's more honest, but, you know, we are very prone, and it's, you know, I would say our generations nowadays are a bit more narcissistic. We want to stop people from seeing those imperfections because we immediately think rejection, or I did this one thing wrong, and then we're going to, oh, they did that one thing wrong. That's the deal breaker. And I'm like, well, why is that a deal breaker? Some people can't even answer that question. That's just something they made up in their mind, that I just can never deal with this one little thing. And I'm like, well, why not? You know, it's just that stuff sometimes won't even come out. I've, you know, I have a lot of friends that they, you know, yeah, of course, initially they were like, oh, you know, I'm going to put my hair up perfect, which is fine. You can dress as nice as you want. You know, and then their behavior was perfect. And then they get married and they're like, I had no idea they did that. I'm like, I did, because that person doesn't put up any fronts in front of me. I just didn't tell you that because it wasn't my place.
Well, it seems like, and this is kind of circling back to what Ashley said at the beginning, we've gotten to a place of having the luxury of being choosy. And we have the whole world open to us, which is a little problematic. You know, you're no longer just finding that person who lives down the street. But I guess I wouldn't say, and I think we'd all agree, that it's not just like, oh, we need to get back to 1939, because people had messed up relationships then too. But I think it's a reminder to us, even in looking at where values have shifted, to go back to scripture, to see, you know, what God values, make sure, you know, like Ashley was saying, you know, is the heart of God in what we're doing? Are we looking to him with an open hand? Are we trusting him? Are we praying it through? I think that will give us some great guidance for moving ahead in relationships, in dating and in friendships. I mean, in establishing great solid relationships. So thanks for fleshing that out, you guys, and the boots on the ground application of it. So great having you.
Yeah, thanks.
Stretch out your arms, it's time to lay down your arms and help each other, all our sisters and brothers. And when will we give up the fight? It never was the fight to hurt each other, all our sisters and brothers. When you don't have the words to explain the hurt, you can lean on me when the bullets are flying. When we're fighting for surviving, lean on me. When you don't have a home, you can lean on me. But when you're walking through the fire, when your feet are getting tired, for my sisters, here's my shoulder. You can lean on me.
Folks, here we are for our culture segment, and we are very privileged to welcome back our own President Jim Daly to the studio. Jim, it's so great to have you here.
It's good to be back, Lisa. Always fun.
Well, it is always fun. And this time around, I was able to bring my fabulous mom to the studio.
She is here.
And she gave you a hug.
She did. She's got a Colorado t-shirt on, which I like.
Well, not only Colorado, but it's a Colorado Focus on the Family t-shirt.
Even better.
She is representing, and she's very excited. She has been talking about this all day. So this is only one step short of her actually being in the studio, which I was like, Mom, let's simmer down. Let Jim and I do this interview. And then maybe someday you and I will do an interview where we'll talk about Jim and about how much he's your friend.
I think I'm in love with your mom.
Well, she is. You're her favorite. So
okay, good.
In fact, I will hear about this interview, and it won't be a thing about my daughter hosts a show or my daughter does anything. It's about okay. Jim Daly.
Wow,
so amazing. Yeah,
she is a fan.
Not that I'm bitter, but I'm just mentioning.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I'm just saying. Well, we are talking to Jim today because, not only because he is the president of Focus on the Family, and he's just a fun guy, and he's an advocate of Boundless.org and all that we have going on for young adults.
It's going well. You guys are doing good.
It is. We're having fun.
Shout out to all the listeners. Way to go.
Woo woo. There they are. But he is the author of a brand new book, Marriage Done Right. And we're going to talk about that because it just released. And so we're pretty excited about this project. And you know, all y'all out there, that we talk a lot about marriage prep here on the show. And so what better way to get equipped than to talk to someone who's a few steps ahead of us, yeah, walking right. that journey.
A few steps ahead, 30 years.
Albeit, yeah, 30 years.
Married. Okay.
Albeit not years. Always perfectly.
No, exactly.
Admit.
That's the right message.
I mean, you anyway. I know Jean's done it well, but you've had your ups and downs.
Hey, she paid you money to say that? What's going
no,
on
No, I just
here?
Remember hearing her speak a couple, you know, a couple months ago, and I was like, no, she's legit, so
she
it must
is
be
quite
all Jim.
Perfect. She is perfect.
It must be all Jim. Okay, well, there's a lot that you cover in this book, and it's funny because there are elements of it that I feel like follow almost my book that I did on dating where I
kind of... Oh, you're thinking I plagiarized
it. Well, I'm just putting it out there. I didn't want to say
right out there.
Feeling like at the front end of my book, I cast a vision for marriage and then I walked into the practicalities of it and how to live it out and stuff like that. And I feel like you're doing that really not only for married folks, but for us as well who believe in marriage. Marriage is to be honored by all, Hebrews 13:4.
Yes.
But I want to start out by treading into this idea of like where our culture is, because I think, you know, and we've talked about this, it's kind of mind blowing here at Boundless that now for the first time in U.S. history, more than 50% of the adult population is single in the U.S.
Amazing.
Craziness. Yeah. Never before seen. And what I think is wild about that is I think there are a lot of factors that have played into that. There's a lot of young adults and others who are delaying marriage. Obviously, we have a divorce rate, you know, that has climbed over the years and stabilized and done a number of things for various reasons. But what would you say, Jim, it seems like as we talk about this script in the culture and we see it in the media, marriage is no longer an assumed story. Why not? Why does that not seem to be the case?
And I think the deconstruction of marriage has taken place over the last 40, 50 years. Yeah. So it's almost like a dam that breaks all at once, but the infrastructure, the cracks were occurring for decades. Mm-hmm. So when you go back to Ronald Reagan, who signed no-fault divorce in California when he was governor there in the 1960s, mm-hmm. That was the first easy way out. It took about, 15 years for the rest of the states to pass that. But I'd say that was one of the big beginnings of the undoing of commitment in mm-hmm. marriage. So, and I think the other
kind
thing...
Kind of a bold move blaming Ronnie there.
Yeah, I know. You know, and I voted for him when I was 18, actually. It was my first
he'd
vote.
He'd admit his fault in that, I'm yeah. sure. Okay.
But the bottom line is we've deconstructed marriage in very critical ways. And it sounds almost archaic to speak in this way, but marriage, the function of marriage for most of the millennia is about childbearing. You know, you get married, you have children and that kind of thing. Those ideas, those values are seemingly outmoded today, which is actually dangerous for the human species if mm-hmm. you think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good thing to get together. It's a good thing. It's a blessing, as the scripture would say, mm-hmm. to have children. And so many today are intimidated by that. Or if I could be bold enough, we're kind of selfish. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to live a life where we got to give to others. The irony, whether it's marriage or parenting, what I've found is that what God does in the institution of marriage, I think the institution of family, mm-hmm. is he's teaching us to be more like him. And what does that mean? Well, it starts with selflessness. So when you have a hyper selfish culture, mm-hmm. a me-oriented culture, mm-hmm. and then you introduce this idea where you've got to give to another person, I don't like that. So we have a perfect storm going, I think, mm-hmm. in the culture right now, where we've got a lot of me-ism going on. Marriage takes a lot of selflessness, not a good combo. Therefore, fewer people are getting married because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird because I remember just reading a HuffPost article where a woman was describing how she basically wanted to reach this state of perfection before she added marriage kind of to her resume or whatever, to her life
check
story.
That box,
yeah.
Know,
and she's just like,
done.
I have so many things I want to do. I have so many things I want to be. And I want to make sure that I pick the exact right person. And it's just, I mean, I feel like that would just be crazy making to feel like you have to pick this exact person. Otherwise, you're going to be a failure at it. And,
right.
You know, and so many young adults are treading into the space where I think we're in an unprecedented place in history where you can do everything without being married, in a sense. You can now
right.
have kids without being married.
Right.
You can now, you know, obviously women can excel in their careers and beyond and kind of have it all, in a sense.
And, right, and some of that is very good. And unfortunately, yeah. some people that may not agree with a Christian perspective, they overstate those things. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody in my circle that really thinks that women should be barefoot, pregnant, and at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the modality anymore. We may attribute that to the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But we want to see that. We want to see freedom for everyone. We want to see people pursue things. But now it becomes an ordering of the important things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to find that on your own.
Sure.
Because the culture is not going to help you suggest what those things are.
Yeah.
So we've got to say, okay, it is a good thing to be married, like you quoted the scripture.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to have children, even though it's hard. Yeah. You know, there's days I don't want to be a dad because I'm tired. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of telling my teenage boys what to do for the 18th time.
Yeah.
But in the long run, when you look at the bedside of people who are dying later in life, mm-hmm. those are the things that actually mean the most. David Brooks, in his book, The Road to Character, he outlines that so very well. I mean, these are the things that matter at the end. It's not the promotion. It's not how many dance classes you went to. It's none mm-hmm. of that stuff. It's mm-hmm. who loves you, who's around you, who cares about you, and who do you care about?
Yeah. Okay, so the title of the book is Marriage Done Right. Then you go and you have the audacity to subtitle it with four words, one man, one woman.
Yes.
So let's just address head on the elephant in the room, which you do so in the book. And that is that 1 year ago, a decision came down from the Supreme Court. And you have, like, say you were sitting in a living room full of 20-somethings who are like, Jim, chill out already. Love is love. I saw Ellen DeGeneres just tweet this with a little rainbow. Okay, love is love. Can we not just let people love who they love? Who's it hurting? What is the big deal? We have Christians asking us that here at Boundless Gym. So what would you, just in a informal gathering of 20-somethings, say to them?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things occurring in the culture that we got to get across. One is, in the United States, we've had over 230 years of a Judeo-Christian value structure. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the realizations now is that Christians no longer control that narrative. Mm-hmm. It was assumed, it was kind of all agreed upon that this is how we behave mm-hmm. and this is what we do. That's no longer true. And one of the things the church has to learn in this environment, this is the first, second, third century Rome, where we don't control anything. People persecute us for what we believe, belittle us for what we believe, mm-hmm. feel that we're biased, bigoted, and all those things. So we got to, I think, learn from those that lived through it all those centuries ago. And you start reading the New Testament, particularly in that way, and it says, you know, lead a quiet life. mm-hmm. Be at peace with all people, if you can. And Timothy even getting instruction from Paul, to don't get bogged down in these trivial, quarrelsome issues. Reach people through grace and truth. And so for me, as I read that and apply it to today's context, what I'm looking at is folks in the Christian community speaking directly to you. We cannot control the culture, mm-hmm. so don't bother. Let's not tell the gay community what to do or how they should live. They're right. We can't do it. God does even. He doesn't do that to them. So what do? We got to look inside. We got to be good examples. Our divorce rate should not be 35%, whatever number, 40%, mm-hmm. whatever number it is. Mm-hmm. There's a big debate about that. So the bottom line is, let's concentrate on ourselves within the community of believers. Let's start living it in a better, more authentic way. And I think what will happen in that context is people will be drawn to the truth. Mm-hmm. Rather than shouting truth to people, rather than trying to dictate or control what people do, that period of time is gone. Mm-hmm. Now we've got to actually roll up our sleeves and do the hard work of living it. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the test for the Christian community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is so hard because I think especially, you know, this is where millennials have done things right. They are very passionate about relationship. And many of them are in the workplace with gay and lesbian friends, or they have brothers and sisters, you know, and they're just like, they're finding it so hard to reconcile. How do I live out what I know to be true and biblical while at the same time wanting to invite my gay and lesbian brothers, sisters, friends, coworkers into my life? And it's weird because I think they've been told for years that they can't do that, that they're going to have to put a strong hand against people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've got to be honest about what the scripture talks about. Mm-hmm. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of times we're ducking. Mm-hmm. Rather than being winsome, being bold, you don't have to go out of your way to be hated. Mm-hmm. Just let the scripture speak for itself. Hey, I'm here to love you, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you Jesus died for your sins, and my sins, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I'm no better than you. Mm-hmm. And we got to believe it and actually live it. Mm-hmm. And I think in that context, when we start looking at ourselves in that way as inadequate, and we look at others as their need for, in recognizing their need for Christ as well, including the gay community. Mm-hmm. We will be far better off in relating to them. I did an interview with Rosaria Champagne Butterfield, mm-hmm. and she said something in that interview that has stuck with me, will stick with me. She came out of a lesbian background. She was head of queer studies at Syracuse. She got a letter from a pastor and his wife saying, come to my house for dinner. We want to get to know you. It shocked her. She had two stacks of letters on her desk at Syracuse. One was the hate mail from the Christians, which she said was venomous. Mm-hmm. I have experienced that from our own Christian community mm-hmm. because I've gone out of my way to meet with gay activists and abortion people and, death threats, all kinds of things coming from people that say in Christ mm-hmm. or in the love of Christ, and they've just threatened you. It's mm-hmm. bizarre.
Yeah.
And at the same time, so Rosaria says to me, you know, what I realized is the gay community as well as the Christian community saw me in my verb. Now, she's an English lit major, PhD. Mm-hmm. So her language was wonderful in this regard. She said, they saw me in my verb. I saw me as my verb. My verb was lesbianism. It was my action. Mm-hmm. It was my sin. Mm. But she said, after about 3 years of meeting with this pastor and his wife, they led her to the Lord. And she said, I read the scripture from front to back about 7 times. And what I realized was I was a noun in God's eyes. Hmm. I was made in his image. Mm-hmm. And she said, as soon as I understood that, I realized I was sinning against God. Hmm. And I decided I could no longer do that. Hmm. That is outstanding theology.
Yeah.
And we all see each other as our verbs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What sin are you? You're the adulterer. You're the, mm-hmm. you know, rather than recognizing that truth of our shortcomings, but seeing us as God sees us, as made in his image and hopefully saved through the blood of Christ.
Yeah. Well, you go a lot, turning a corner here, you go a lot in the book towards the benefits of marriage. And of course, we're talking largely to never married young adults here. So can you unpack for us, Jim, some of what you believe, not only, you know, theologically and, you know, psychologically and whatever, but just even practically as a husband and dad, what really are some of the benefits of marriage that you see? You know, because this is the Boundless Show, we're just going to throw out one of them as being sex. Because
hey, I'm glad we're on Boundless. I wouldn't say that on Focus.
We say all kinds of things here on Boundless.
I got to start listening more often.
I know. Well, I'm telling you, it is like, it's so crazy to me how many, I mean, there were young adults in our audience, you know, living with their boyfriends, sleeping around, whatever, but we are still calling our audience to sexual purity and realizing that, you know, that's why we're big proponents of marriage, because sex is a benefit of marriage. So that is one of them.
Let me give you, this wasn't in the book, but this is the web extra.
bonus feature.
The bonus feature.
All right.
I'm talking to my boys right now. They're going to be 16 and 14 soon. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to them, listen, when it comes to sex, it is an awesome thing. And what's beautiful about it is God created this gift for you for your wedding night. Mm-hmm. And he wants you to open the gift on your wedding night. And I said to my boys, I said, I'm so passionate about taking that gift into your marriage that I'm willing to give you $10,000 each. Now, I'm trying to save that money right now, believe me. But I said it to him. I said, I want to incentivize you to do that so that you can think about it really hard before you do that outside of the context of marriage. Mm-hmm. My younger son, Troy, he went, I'm in. Count me in. I could do that. And I'm thinking, okay, you're saying that way too easily. And Trent was a little more contemplative. He's the one that's almost 16. He was like, no, I think that's a good idea. The point of it, the whole thing, it is the beauty of it. God created this for that context of marriage, lifelong mm-hmm. marriage. Mm-hmm. And I would say in a woman's heart, for you women listening, you know this to be true. You know that bonding that occurs. And it may not be the only person you loved, but I can almost assure you that first love that you've had, there's something unique to that. It's even in our biochemistry. God has made our bodies in such a way mm-hmm. that when we fall in love with that person and we have physical intimacy, there's enzymes and hormones that are released in your body, particularly in women, that's a bonding feature. Mm-hmm. It helps you to bond to that man. Mm-hmm. I find that really unique. Mm-hmm. I find that supportive of the idea of lifelong marriage. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at it, that wedding night sex you know, opportunity. It's the whole bundle. It's intimacy emotionally and spiritually and praying together and coming together as one. It's beautiful, and it is a special and unique gift from God.
Yeah. What about, talk to us about some benefits of marriage that maybe surprised you.
Yeah,
because, I mean, you had a guy, like, approach you at church, basically tell you, I mean, I think you told the story at Pursuit when you when you spoke at Pursuit a couple of years ago. This guy that just basically spoke a word over you about your future wife when you were on some dating fast, which I think is kind of weird, but let's not, you know, whatever. Okay, no. Jim Daly's on a dating fast.
Well, that was back in my early 20s. No, I mean, that was an area for me that was out of control. You know, I was the quarterback of the football team. I was Christian most days of the week, but Friday night, I seemed to forget my commitment to the Lord.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it'd be the game, it'd be the party after the game, and it'd be, you know, other things that would happen.
Okay.
And for me in that context, it was just an area that I felt the Lord wanted me to give to him. And so it was about 2 years. Yeah, it was a dating fast. Mm. It was even worse. I remember having this debate in my head with the Lord and him saying, and I don't even want you to hold a girl's hand because you know what'll happen. Hmm. Just that physical touch and how easily that could lead to other things.
Okay.
So it was that instructive to me. And it really humbled me in that area. And so I was in at the end of that 2 year period of time. I was 23 years old, right at the end of my 23rd year. And I can remember Pastor Jim Cobray. I didn't know him well. I'd never, other than say hello to him, I hadn't had a discussion with him or a talk. He didn't know who I was. And he came up to me and he said, I got a word from the Lord for you, which my reaction was, uh-oh. And he said, the Lord has your wife picked out for you, and she's going to have a heart for the things of God. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I'm not in the mode of, wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm in the mode of, this guy has no clue where I'm at right now. And what do we do with false prophets? Do we stone them to death? How do we stone people to death today?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what I was thinking. That was a Wednesday night.
And you could see the string of spinsterish women being lined up.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a daughter for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what ended up happening? That was a Wednesday night. Saturday, I went to my friend's wedding. I was the best man. And I met Jean at that wedding 3 days later. And I remember when she walked out, I had a brief conversation with her. She walked out and I said to a friend of mine, I think that's the woman I'm going to marry. Not really even thinking about the Wednesday night thing.
Yeah.
But she just really took me by storm. And she ironically wasn't dating either. So it was hard for us to go on a first date. Our poor friends were trying so hard. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, I think it was 9 months later, we finally went to a concert at the Pacific Amphitheater in Newport Beach. And it wasn't a date. It was just four friends going out together. And I brought a little picnic dinner for her and me. And we just sat and fell in love that night.
All right. In light of that, then, give us a couple actual benefits of marriage that people maybe have to look forward to or wouldn't even expect, possibly. Well,
you know, there's the broad application. University of Chicago did a study. They had two groups of people, those that were divorce-minded, those that were going to try to work through their difficulties. After 5 years, those that were divorced were less happy. Those that stuck through it and worked through their hard times in their marriages were happier. 85% were happier. Mm. That's an important message for the Boundless audience, I think, because the point that study is making is you got to stick through it. Marriage, it can be rough at times because it's challenging you. Living with another person is challenging. Jean and I, when we first got married, I had the opportunity, and I used to pray about this. I would say, Lord, in the early days, you know, in the Jewish tradition, a newly married couple would get a year to be together. And, you know, I just thought, wow, that's wonderful. A year-long honeymoon. But that could never happen in today's culture. Well, bang, I got a call from a friend. He was doing drug and alcohol abuse shows for PepsiCo, and they needed teams of two to go out around the country during the school year in a custom van. And you got paid a per diem and a fair wage and all that. So I called Gene. That's what actually got us to our wedding date. And I said, you want to go out and do this together, the two of us, for the first year of our marriage? And she was like, let me pray about it. Because Gene is a bit more introverted. She's a biochemist. chemist. She's a scientist. Mm-hmm. Everything has to be a little more mapped out. Mm-hmm. She wants to think about something like that. I'm more spontaneous, extroverted. Mm-hmm. What a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. Let's go. She said yes. Mm-hmm. And so I called my friend back, and we went on the road for 9 months together. Mm-hmm. And we learned so much. It was hard. Mm-hmm. I remember one night, that introversion, she said, we're at a hotel, and she said, I'm going to go get a few snacks and groceries. And we're together 24/7. Mm-hmm. And I had the audacity and the short-sightedness to say to her, oh, can I go? And she was like, oh, I'd really like to go alone. Mm-hmm. And at first, it hurt me. Yeah. I was like, wow, why wouldn't she want me to be there with her? You know, it's going to be 20 minutes out of our life that we weren't together this first year. Mm-hmm. But she just needed space. Yeah. So one of the benefits is to learn one another's personality and how to grow with each other. I think for me, growing up as an orphan kid, the mm-hmm. thing for me that I've learned in our relationship is how to be more open. Mm-hmm. I think Jean, to be fair, would say, yeah, it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. I'm not completely there yet, but I'm kind of the pick yourself up by your bootstraps kind of guy. And so mm-hmm. when she's had difficulty and she's trying to talk with me, I'm listening and nodding like I should do. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, I'm not emotionally connecting with her. Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel? What was going on in your heart? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do so much more of that now that I've been married to her 30 years. I'm finally catching on to the fact that I need to connect with her in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I think the benefits for me, it's the positiveness of selflessness. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is there are so many benefits to learning humility, mm-hmm. to learning selflessness, to laying your life down for another person. Mm-hmm. They don't sound like good things to do, mm-hmm. but they make you a better person. Mm-hmm. And that's what you get in marriage.
Yeah. Well, and now you have the opportunity, right, to, you've been doing some fostering.
I have, yeah, we have been.
Another journey.
To Jean's credit, again, that's her heart. She's got a heart.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I remember her talking about this. I think it was just last month, and just weeping about the opportunity and just the love she has for these kids. And I think you've been, to hear you talk about it, you know, it's been a little more, there've been a little road bumps.
It's embarrassing to even talk like that. But I mean, in this case, I'm like, okay, I was in the foster system. I get it. Certainly, we love these kids, and we want to put an arm around them and protect them. But Jean, like, do you have to get up and be their waitress every time they say, I want more toast?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm actually coaching her on the back end going, let them struggle a little.
Yeah.
Because she just wants to overcompensate. But it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But those are kind of some of the debates we're having at home right now. Let them struggle a little.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, last night, this little girl who's in our home, she's just about to turn 5. And I was tucking them into bed, and her little brother, who's 3, is with us too. So the two of them in a bedroom in bunk beds. Hmm. And she grabbed my hand and started to use my hand to stroke her hair.
Aww.
And to put her cheek into my palm.
Aww.
And she's holding it and moving my hand. And I said, are you okay? And she said, I am. I just want to know you love me.
Aww.
I mean, you think about that. This little girl, we've had them 5 months.
Wow.
She just so desperately needs to know that someone cares about her.
Yeah.
Because she can't comprehend why her mommy and daddy aren't in her life right now.
Yeah.
And I give Jean great credit for having that heart.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, you know, I feel like I'm in a situation now, you know, in caregiving and stuff, where I can come in, and I did on the front end, saying, I'm going to be a hero, and this is going to be amazing, and it's going to be, and then all of a sudden, like, real life things happen, and you're like, maybe I'm not a hero, maybe I'm just mean, maybe, and I remember I was cracking up about the story you told about having to drive to Denver to a fast food joint to pick up a bear that had been left, and you're like,
Brah! Oh, that was too much. I mean, that was crazy. Yeah, I took the kids up for their parental visit. So, you know, it's like an hour drive to Denver. Yeah. And I pull into the parking lot, and I get a message from the social worker, parents canceling visit. And, of course, the kids are excited.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, now I got all this trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to another fast food place so there wouldn't be any conflict. And she wanted to bring her bear in. And I'm thinking, that's no problem. Bring the bear in, sweetie. And so we had dinner with the bear. It was mm-hmm. a nice little bear.
Yeah.
And then we left. And, you know, an hour, almost at home, an hour later, she goes, oh, Mr. Jim, I left my bear at the Chick-fil-A. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. We'll get it next time when we're out there. So I tell Jean the next day, and she goes, not that bear? I said, yeah. And she goes, that bear is the school's bear, the preschool that she goes to. And it's been a 20-year tradition. And every week that bear goes to a new student. And tomorrow I've got to deliver that bear. And they've never missed giving that bear to the next student. Now I'm...
It is like an act of God that the bear was even still there.
And then, yeah, so I called. Like I said, is the bear there? And Gene went up the next morning, drove all the way back to Denver, got the bear and delivered it in time for the teacher to present it to the next student of the week.
Yeah. I mean, had I been a five-year-old, I would have stolen that bear straight out of that Chick-fil-A.
It's a pretty cool bear.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, so as we wrap here, Jim, tell us, what does someone in our audience, say a 26-year-old single young adult, need to know about where Focus is going moving forward? Give us a little vision, because we're really, you know, at Boundless, we're doing a lot with marriage prep, but we're always kind of casting that vision for what does your relationship with Focus look like growing, moving forward as you head towards engagement and marriage and family and all the things that Focus has going on. What are you excited about?
Wow. I think if I could say vision in terms of character, you know, at Focus, we completed the homes for those that were martyred by ISIS. Mm-hmm. You know, we did 20 of the 21 families. And here's the lesson I learned out of that. When we raised the money, it was quick. It was four phone calls and donors said, yes, we'll do it. And I'm so grateful to them. We had those homes built in Egypt, and we have an office in Cairo, and Sammy Yacoub runs that office. And I was calling Sammy every month to get detail, you know, results on where things were at. And right at the end, Sammy said to me on the phone, calling me from Cairo, he said, Jim, you know, the families are weeping. And I said, Sammy, you know, of course they're weeping. Their husbands or sons or fathers were killed. And he said, no, Jim, the families are weeping with joy that they were counted worthy to suffer for the name of Christ. Hmm. You want to talk about vision for the future? It's not about numbers. It's not about, you know, we can save this person or that person. It's about developing character in people like that who know what it is to be a Christ follower. Hmm. That means laying your life down, getting that selfishness out of you, doing the right thing for the right reasons, not because we're drawn to rules, but we're drawn to relationship in Christ. Mm-hmm. And that motivates us to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm challenged by that. Mm-hmm. Me and my Western mind, my voting rights, every other right that I have, mm-hmm. I think the Lord's whispering in my ear, it's not about those rights, Jim, it's about their salvation.
Yeah.
So you look at vision, for me, it's about how many can we save?
Yeah. That's super cool and great that not only Focus on the Family, but even us at boundless.org can be part of that and part of that vision. And of course, being the next generation, hopefully, or current generation, let's be honest, folks, of Focus on the Family and boundless.org donors. We have the opportunity to be part of that and to pray for it and to support it and see what the Lord does.
I'm excited. I am not discouraged by this generation. Yeah. I think the Lord is working in you in ways that he hasn't worked in other generations. And I think you're going to see some amazing things.
Super cool. All right, folks. Well, we have got details about Jim's book. Again, it is Marriage Done Right, if you hop over to boundless.org. And when you support what we have going on here, which also supports the work of Focus on the Family, with a gift of any amount today, we will send you a copy of the resource to you as our way of saying thank you. So you will find it practical and inspiring. Of course, it is from Jim's heart. And so make that donation online, boundless.org, or give us a call at 800. The letter A and the word family, and we will shoot it right on out to you. You know, maybe if you're in my neighborhood, I'll even walk it over. Who knows? I'm just saying. All right. Well, that is it. Jim, thank you so much for being part of the conversation and sharing a bit of your heart through this book and otherwise.
Good, Lisa. Good to be with you.
Take all of the promises I made to you and burn them to the ground. Sand and open wounds can sting. Ain't like me to sit and watch you bleed lately. I know that you needed me. I know that I failed you. Oh, but you are not alone. On the
Well, this is fun. This is for the third segment of our show, and we tape these each week. So we'll see what Greg has to say, if it's actually legit. So, okay, Greg, these are actual questions from our listeners to the show, FYI. So this is why this is the real deal. So you need to be honest, but also wise.
Okay.
So please.
Okay. Both of those?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, the first one, here we go. I have a very close male friend whom I've been friends with all my life. I moved to another country with my family in my teenage years, but we still kept in contact. We are both Christians and would love to commit to a long-term relationship with the hope of marriage. The truth is, I'm terrified of us getting married simply because we may have to live separately for a while. I have a work contract that doesn't permit me to work anywhere else for 6 years. He's currently looking to relocate to another country to further his education. Do you advise that we just let go and go our separate ways, which will be heartbreaking, or do you see a way for us to pursue a relationship together?
Yeah, great question.
That's a big separation issue.
That is. Yeah. I would say first and foremost, decide if this is who you want to marry. Yeah. Start there.
Okay.
If, you know, God gives us choice in this matter, he's not up there dictating who we're going to marry. There's not the soulmate piece that a lot of people talk about. Mm-hmm. So I would say if, as you think of this guy, is this who you want to spend your life with? To think about not being with him over the next 50, 60, 70 years, if that causes you pain and you're going, no, I want to be with this person, start there. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I would go, the whole thing about should we get married and then live separately, I would say absolutely not. I mean, people do that, but I would never advise that. The reason being, that's a very different question when you've been married 5, 10, 15 years. Plenty of people have to live separately for some length of time. Maybe it's a job change. Mm-hmm. And they've already built up the relational capital. They have a lot in place that would help them navigate that. A couple who's getting married brand new, I would never recommend that. As a matter of fact, Deuteronomy 24:5 said, if a man has recently married, he must not be sent to war or have any other duty laid on him. For 1 year, he is free to stay at home and bring happiness to the wife he has married. Mm-hmm. First of all, I wish that was like 5 years. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have spent 5 years doing nothing.
Yeah.
War duty, I would say, applies in our day and age to work, to ministry, to other, you know, social engagements. I mean, just anything that's going to interfere with that first year of you guys really being together, establishing the relationship, learning about one another, just deepening that relationship now as husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And Aaron and I, we've been married 24, almost 25 years. We were separated during our whole year-long engagement. Mm-hmm. And that really caused some challenges for us walking into marriage. And this is someone who I'd been friends with at college for mm-hmm. 4 years before we started really dating. Mm-hmm. I would not recommend that at all. Yeah. What I would say to them, is if you guys want to get married, get married. Mm-hmm. It sounds like she's under contract. And so maybe for him, it's delaying the start of his education.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not sure quite what that means. There's online options now,
right,
differently than when I first got married. When Aaron and I got married, we decided that I was going to finish my doctorate first, but she wanted to get her master's degree. And so the arrangement was, when I'm done, I will take a job that will allow me to stay home with our two daughters at that point. Mm-hmm. So you can pursue that. And that's exactly what we did. Yeah. And so I would say to him, delay that or look for another option. You know, there's that whole argument, they call it cornerstone versus capstone in terms of getting married. Mm-hmm. Cornerstone means that, like, you put the first stone in building a home. That first stone is the cornerstone. And you get married, you choose who you want to get married as your first decision, and then you do the rest of life together, and you grow up together, you learn together, which I love that idea. That's what Aaron and I did. Versus capstone, which is kind of, you do all this other stuff and finish all your school and make sure you have the right job, then you get married. I don't like that particular way of thinking. Mm-hmm. I would say to them, get married. This is who you're choosing. This is who you want to spend mm-hmm. your life with. And then figure these things out. Don't be apart during your first, yeah, for them, it sounds like several years.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll work out the way that they hoped it would.
Yeah. That's cool. There are always options, folks. Always options. It's something a lot of young couples face.
Exactly.
Like, for real. All right. Hey, thanks, Gray.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Hit us up with your questions and comments, folks, especially if you have something related to that or a new question you want us to ask. Well, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you. If you could write to us at editor@boundless.org and let us know what you think. Make sure you're passing the show along to your friends as well and commenting in the blog section of boundless.org. If you haven't already as well, I want you to leave us a review on iTunes, because that is where new folks can find out about us. So if you're liking the show, you like what you hear, do drop us a review over at iTunes at The Boundless Show. That is it for this week's show. I'll see you around next week for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.